This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello, and welcome to this special edition of the Saxo Market Call podcast. We are talking generative AI. We've positioned this as part one, and we are recording this on Wednesday, April 5th, 2023. We should have it out shortly after, and we're hoping to have a follow-up part two with an AI industry expert. We can't pre-promise on that 100%, but we hope to have a follow-up quite soon and delve into it with a real expert, unlike ourselves, where we're part novice, part, quickly as possible, getting up to speed on this whole industry. Because Peter, you're with me today, and I think you have to agree, or at least my way of looking at this is a technology that has just come seemingly out of nowhere in terms of onto the public, the consciousness of the public here. But of course, it's been something that's been under development for many, many years, decades even. But it's the impact here is what's really staggering when you look at the potential for this technology to impact, especially our working lives. It feels like it's just the biggest sort of impact technology on our daily lives that I can recall since the internet. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, to some extent that really echoes what Bill Gates has just recently said, that we had the computer and PC revolution, and then we got the internet revolution, which he initially didn't believe in. And then Microsoft certainly caught on to that one. And now he says that this is the third revolution in that arc of, digitalizing our world. And in that conversation I had with this industry expert on AI system, he said that, 8 years ago, all the hype was around, machine learning, which was a lot around what is called supervised learning. So we have all these labels, and then we try to create a very good mapping function for data points into these labels. And there was a lot of hype back then. And what did we get out of it? As you said, we got a little bit of better models for placing ads on ad networks, and a little bit better, maybe a little bit other types of rudimentary business analytics and predictions. But it didn't really revolutionize the world. But I think this one, as you say, has a far greater potential, and you can see the uptake. I think it was just in the first week, ChatGPT got 1 million. Users, which was, I think, got the prize as being the fastest user adoption ever recorded in history. And I think that's very just to the point. People are excited about this.
Yeah. And it's a stunning product as well. When you ask it certain types of questions, please compose a paragraph for me about X, it does it in very natural language. It does a very good job of it. And you can, of course, if you're writing an essay for school, the risk is you could copy and paste it. And there are detection mechanisms for that, but it's just stunning how it's able to mimic our natural language and the intelligence of it based on its, of course, research of the whole output of humanity. But let's maybe take a couple steps here. So first of all, let's look at how much I put up a few slides. A lot of this is from a Sequoia Capital presentation that was online. There's a link to it. I'll try to put that in the podcast description. It's a great just sort of summary piece of what the space is all about. But just the scale of computing power and effort that is going into creating this intelligence in artificial intelligence. There's a chart there on slide two showing that these AI training runs, so-called estimated computing resources used. So those number of training runs or floating point operations for these training runs reaching on the order of a trillion. So one septillion, if that's a number you can sort of wrap your head around. And the performance benchmarks are getting to sort of superhuman levels on what it can achieve. So it's pretty amazing what's going on here.
Yeah, and one of the things that are pretty scary about that chart is that it's a log scale. And you can see it's not a straight line. So the growth rate is not constant. It's actually super linear, as it's called.
And super exponential?
Super exponential, super linear. You can call it both. And it just highlights the speed of progress here. And obviously, it's not sustainable unless this is really the magic technology, to the one technology to conquer them all, because something can be super exponential for a while until it sort of gobble up the resource or it hits a natural limit. You see that in many biological systems. But being here, and I think actually again echoing, and he will be talking to this expert in part two, hopefully, that you just have this feel, John, that you're standing at the edge or you're looking into the horizon, you can imagine something that is very, very different from what we have today. It's the feeling that there is a technology here that can transform our lives. And I wonder whether that is what our grandparents experienced when we got electricity like 140 years ago. Think about, you had all this darkness and very, you know, smelly candles inside your homes. And then suddenly you can turn on a light bulb and you could extend, you know, factory hours. You could extend the number of hours you could read a book at home, and all these things.
I mean, yeah, there's even the argument, and I kind of believe it or agree with it, that the transformation from the early 19th century, so pre sort of steam locomotion, and to the late 19th century, so the 40 years there between locomotion and all the mechanical progress we made was a bigger change than anything we've seen really. Since then. So yeah, a key point. I mean, and first of all, let's before we get too philosophical, big picture, talking about the 19th century here, let's have a look at a definition. So generative AI. So we're not just talking about AI, but this specific space and what's generating all the excitement, and that is generative AI. So rather than taking the trouble to compose any definition myself, I just asked ChatGPT to do it for me. And you can see that on slide 3. How ChatGPT describes generative AI, and it's a very good definition. It's about teaching machines to generate new and original content, but based on the sort of sum learnings it can make from existing data. And then there are all kinds of domains that it can do this within, whether it's images, text, and there's some images, by the way, that we've sprinkled throughout the slides, some of them quite humorous, so we'll hopefully have a couple minutes to discuss those. Music, videos, and even 3D, etc. The process usually involves feeding the model huge amounts of data, and that's, like you said, one of the limiting factors, the energy requirements for training these systems, training it to identify patterns, and then generating new content based on those patterns. So it's often used in creative fields, art, music, literature, but also has practical applications. This will be so key, I think, we talked about for the general applications across so many different job titles, whether it's healthcare, finance, or transportation even. And then in the Sequoia Capital piece I mentioned, there's a good chart I put up on slide 4. You can see the link to that at the bottom of the page. And you can see that the type of progress that has been made, where it says, okay, first attempts are classified as orange, almost there in terms of yellow. And here we are in 2023, and it's giving the green light to some areas that's, you know, it's ready for prime time. And those are in some of these generative text, generative AI on text output, so scientific papers, on code, in terms of building code for programmers, for programs, for programming. I've heard of that many are using it as to build sort of a skeleton basis upon which to further build computer programs. And then on down the line with more difficult tasks like images and video and 3D game and gaming, further along, maybe requiring another 5 to 7 years to get there.
I saw someone posting something that was quite incredible. It was he was prompting GPT-4, which is the next level after the ChatGPT, about generating. I think it was done via an API plugin to something and another program, and it could actually create code for generating 3D objects in this program, and then it could add a little bit of light from the left angle on these boxes that were flowing in the air. Boom, it happened. And then it prompted, okay, add some shadows from the other angle. Boom, it came. And then make some dynamic movement with, and then it moved, these boxes moved around. And it was just interesting that he created a small 3D universe based off prompting with natural language text.
Asking. Yeah, and there's even this, you say prompting, and that word prompt is so important for how the system learns and can be sort of rated and maybe improve its output, because there's a whole new job description out there called a prompt engineer. It's the latest and greatest in sort of the domain of AI, where you can get paid to basically train these systems. And it's really interesting because, and we talked about some of the imperfections, so your anecdote there, but it's not a perfect system. I mean, look at the image we have on the first slide, the intro slide. I prompted a Stable Diffusion. It's a image generating AI. I said, hey, draw a Dane and a Texan recording a podcast, which is basically what we're doing right now. And for some reason, it put 3 people into the image. Maybe there's a producer that the AI knew about that we didn't know about. But just interesting to see how it grasped or grappled with that task. I think there were some design elements that it had built in as well. that were assumed with those weird background photos you see there on that slide. And you can see, you know,
they're not from Texas, are they?
Well, I don't know. one looks like I guess the hipster looking guy must be the Dane. And then further along, if you jump forward as well to slide seven, you could ask for it to do a charcoal sketch of the same. Again, I don't know that sour guy there. Is that you or me? I'm not sure. And then the one on the right is supposed to be a photorealistic, and you can see how the hand is a bit too pudgy and relative to the arm, things like that. But, you know, it's pretty impressive that it, from thin air, it can create these kinds of images. But rolling back to where we were in the slide deck, and I think what's interesting, and we'll get more to the investable space where it's your wheelhouse, Peter. But this was also from Sequoia Capital. It's not in that piece, but it was another piece by another company that referred to this image that I have on slide five. You can see that just the abundance of players out there. I mean, this is a you know, wildly expanding space. Lots of venture capital pouring into the space for specific applications, and you can see all those different application types in the different boxes. So text is the big blue area, but within text you have knowledge, a general ability to write, AI assistance, ability to chat. And then there's the video side, images, static images for coding. I think, Peter, you may know something about this, but the GitHub, I think, is one of the central tools that is used and being very actively used within the programming, computer programming, to create programs in part automatically that can be then extended and built on.
Yeah, I mean, that's another feature of this technology is that you can use GPT-4 or ChatGPT to very quickly come up with some code that can generate a web application in JavaScript or whatever that works almost on the fly. And what I read from, you know, the search I did on Twitter of people playing with this code parts or features, if you will, of the technology, it can create something that is very fast and it works, but then as soon as you want to sort of change the code a little bit, it becomes extremely fragile and then very quickly you run into bugs and in the code. So it's and it's not always that you get, because it mirrors everything that's out there. So how does it know whether, let's say, a specific part of a code block that does something XYZ, whether all the data points that it looked at, that this code over here was the right one, and actually those over here had some bugs, but I didn't know about it. So I mean, there is something there, but I think that it's just amazing that we are here, and I'm quite sure it will continue to develop at a rapid pace. It will only get better. So that's very interesting, very exciting times.
Yeah, and you see all the creepy applications, somewhat creepy to my mind. There's at least, 10 players there in the little box in yellow, speech and voice synthesis. So artificial voices that are meant obviously to mimic humans, and could it mimic your own voice saying something you've never said? There's, of course, those deep fake fears, and even applications like music, etc. So just a proliferation of different companies. I'm sure none of those on that screen are publicly listed, but we'll get to the publicly listed space in a moment. And then you can kind of see on slide six, there's a statement at the end of that Sequoia Capital piece that points to where this is going. And it's just amazing to think about that, you know, let's say you wanted to create Toy Story, the film, in the 1990s, which is when it was created. There was an awful lot of computer horsepower and designers by the hundreds. I have no doubt that were required extremely intricate skills that they needed to have to be able to program those 3D systems back then. And some of this 3D stuff has gotten easier with these tools that you can build on top of. But imagine you could just do it by describing via text what you want. And if the scene is a little bit off, you just describe by text, no, you want it a little bit this way, a little bit like you were talking about with the 3D design of a product. You could design an entire 3D experience or a story or even a movie, full movie, with text, interact and prompt the AI engine to push it out for you. And that could be your school project. Or just for fun. Yeah, sort of like YouTube stars that have been discovered, created their own stuff in their home studios and became stars that way. You could have unbelievable power at your fingertips. And supposedly, according to their time frame, within 5 to 7 years, if this kind of thing is available in 2030. Okay, let's hop forward to the investable space, because there is a lot of noise and a lot of actual market volatility and moves happening on the back of news and on the back of assumptions about where, you know, what companies will benefit here. And actually, just before we popped into the studio, and it, you don't need to address the specific story, Peter, but there was a little headline that Alphabet says that its what was it? Its AI engine was more efficient and did better job than NVIDIA, and it was more energy efficient than their chip. And Alphabet stock was up 1.3% in pre-open in the pre-market. So there's a lot of impact going on here into the investable space. So take us through where your focus is in our AI theme list.
Yeah, I think actually if we just wind back a little bit as well. So what Alphabet said was that when the news hit with the ChatGPT and the world exploded in excitement, they came out and actually said, you know, 3 years ago, the management group of Alphabet or Google were presented with a technology that was very similar to ChatGPT inside Google. And the management thought it was so, not creepy, but they couldn't, because they had very strict ethical guidelines inside Google for this type of technology, that they were very hesitant. So they didn't go along with it. A lot of the AI research at that point, they were frustrated, they were angry. They eventually left Google and started other startups. And that's also one of the reasons why Google could come up with their version so quickly, because they had been...
This is a so-called Bard.
The Bard, yeah. And they had been researching on this for quite some time. And it just shows you how they immediately saw that this would potentially was a threat to their search business, because could this be a different way of doing searching? I mean, Oscar, which sits in our team, he told me something that was quite funny. So he prompted ChatGPT with an interesting query. So I'm going to Thailand with two adults and one child below one, or infant if you want. And in what hotel, can you recommend me 5 hotels in the medium price range in this area or around Phuket or whatever it was? And then it came up with 5 hotels with pretty good ratings. And then he looked at them and then he singled out one. Okay, I like this one. Can you find 3 or 4 additional hotels in this? It can be a little bit more expensive, but in the same area and sort of the same style. Yes, of course. And then it came with 4 others. And he actually ended up planning almost a whole travel by prompting the ChatGPT.
Didn't realize that it was sort of up to date enough to do that kind of.
Well, it has the data until late 2021. Wow. So I guess it's good enough for just this type. But anyway, coming back to your initial question on slide 9, it's a very difficult theme to be investing in. And that's also why I've been a little bit hesitant creating the AI theme. But I think we've been pushed over the edge here and we had to do it. And we've tried to come up with a list of 20 stocks sitting in around the 5 different areas of the AI. And some of it is more direct exposure, some of it is more indirect, just, you know, tagging along with the hype, if you will. So we have the semiconductors. So NVIDIA, TSMC, and AMD. ASML, which makes the lithography equipment for carving out the little channels where the electrons are moving in the microchips. We have the software makers, so that's Microsoft, Alphabet, Meta, Baidu, etc. We have data storage and semiconductor testing, and then AI corporate integration, where you can say, okay, this is a very long shot, right? Because Accenture is a lot of things.
It's exactly, and that's probably one of the points here, is it's so difficult because the incumbent industry players here are doing all kinds of other stuff. And I guess some of their business could even be threatened by what's going on here, like you pointed out with Alphabet. Maybe the more interesting space becomes, and the risky space as well, when some of these startups, ventures start IPOing, and that's tradable. It's just not now. So we're very early days, and maybe some of these just get acquired before they can even begin to trade as an IPO, has often been a frustration in the past year.
Maybe the easiest way is actually to identify industries that will be upended by this. So actually finding good short opportunities, industries that will have difficulties with this technology. I also highlighted in blue this from DeepMind, because I think this is one of the things that makes it so difficult, because I think this is a personal opinion. So, OpenAI, of course, amazing researchers, but I think that DeepMind is the AI research group in the world that has solved the most problems. Some of them very domain specific, with the AlphaGo, etc., the AlphaFold that can sort of give you a rough estimation of a protein folding problem, etc. So I think this is the top notch AI unit of the world, and it sits inside Alphabet, right? But 98% of the variance of Alphabet's share price is driven by Google, which is driven by advertising. So it just underscores why it's so difficult. And one of the things, and before I get to a very important point, which I think you will appreciate and like, John, I just typed in the Bloomberg terminal, so what are some AI ETFs? And you can see highlighted here on slide 10, some of the names with red markers here, and those are basically companies where I said, okay, these have very, very little to do with an AI theme, right? But they still sit inside here, and I think that is what makes this so difficult. I think if you want to have exposure, and you can see this ETF, by the way, that's the black line on the performance chart year to date. You can clearly see the outperformance from this group of companies. But I think if you really want the exposure, I think that NVIDIA is, per definition, probably the most pure exposure you can get to AI technology in any form or shape. And I use this analogy to the gold rush in the, was it the 1840s?
1849, I think, was the massive big rush in California, at least. There were multiple different ones, different places.
Exactly. And there's this wonderful quote, right? During a gold rush, sell shovels,
yeah.
Right? Because a lot of these people that are searching for gold, and also a lot of these venture-backed capital companies that are deploying all this capital to get gold in the AI technology, they might turn out to be, you know, they took the risk, and we love that as a you know, from an economic point of view. But some of them, a lot of them, will fail. So it's just easier to sell the shovel, and I think the shovel here is the GPUs.
Yeah, interesting. But the risk, of course, is that it's already very richly valued at these current levels. But it's amazing. It's a cat with nine lives, that NVIDIA, riding two big waves of the crypto. And of course, the cryptocurrency mining phase there into 2000. What was it? The first one was in 17, and then again in 21, 22. So yeah, a renaissance for that stock, particular stock.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that the second wave you see there on the valuation, which lasted from around 2019 until, you know, the end of 2021, was not only Bitcoin, but it was also this incredible hype from Elon Musk around self-driving technology, which is a different form of AI. It's not these large language models. And I, a fun fact, John, I was driving behind a Tesla this morning when I drove into work, and then it was very clear that it was on autopilot, because it had very stupid behavior. And if it wasn't the autopilot, I mean, then I don't know what this
artificial driver, stupidity.
Yeah, artificial stupidity. It was driving so odd.
Yeah,
so
I saw one. It looked like it was drunkenly trying to navigate a roundabout, and I suspect as well it was a Tesla that was on autonomous mode.
The real world is difficult.
The real world is very difficult, but maybe the creative process or for inspiration could be a little bit less difficult, or cracking things like natural language processing. Yeah, and you know, this is not meant to be some massive fantasia or whatever you want to call it on the endless opportunities in this space. There are opportunities, there are risks, and a lot of the risks are potentially negative on, again, the energy consumption in this space. And I suppose that's what you're focusing on there in on slide 12.
Yeah, because, I mean, it requires quite a bit of GPUs to train these very large models. And there have been all these different attempts to estimate what is the electricity consumption, and some said, oh, I mean, to train a single model, it consumes the same energy as 100 households in the US, and pose that as something that is terrible. And like, okay, 100 households versus this technology, okay, give me a break. And others have estimated that it, you know, the ChatGPT may have consumed as much as electricity as 175,000 people in January alone, 2023. Again, I would say, in the grand scheme of things, in the world perspective, it's probably still worth taking that risk. But then, I found this little quote from Bloomberg with the yellow marks here, markers, which I find much more interesting because of ESG. A company like Google is coming up with these ESG reports where they show how much electricity they use, and there they also they highlight that artificial intelligence systems inside Google is consuming somewhere between 10 and 15% of the company's total electricity consumption, which is 18.3 terawatt hours in 2021. That has probably gone up ever since, and that is actually the same as a city as the size of Atlanta.
And think about all of the terawatt hours that are used in having systems running that are poking Google to answer questions.
Yeah,
the whole infrastructure of the internet and a coming artificial intelligence semi-based economy and the impacts it'll have does mean more power. But if it brings more productivity, then I suspect that trade-off is going to be worth it if we can figure out how to do sufficiently clean energy and provide that into the, you know, to drive this whole beast.
I think actually that this is one of the key things that people inside the technology sector often forget, because we've been in this environment, I think, over the past 15 years with not only low interest rates, but also very cheap energy cost until we had the energy crisis. And I think it masked, and in some ways also it hit the underlying potential constraints, because there is this notion of technology that AI and this digitalization is unbounded in terms of its growth, but it's not unbounded. It sits inside physical infrastructure, microchips, data centers. They all run on electricity that has to be produced. And we had this interesting headline. We talked about it on the podcast. Namo, which is one of the biggest ammunition manufacturers in Europe, that wanted to expand their production in Norway, but they couldn't, because apparently the regional part of that region of Norway had already promised TikTok that they could build this data center with the hydroelectricity they had in the region, the spare capacity. So suddenly you could not fulfill objective or aims that you had in the physical world because of what happened in the digital world. And I just think it's real. I think ultimately, for this to be completely unbounded, we need to solve fusion energy. And I think, to some extent at least, and fusion energy, DeepMind actually had a go at that. I think you and I discussed it. So this is where I think AI becomes super interesting, is if it can help us solve problems in the real physical world. And what DeepMind did was that they... So you have these big tokamak reactors where you have these magnet fields on the outside of the plasma to keep the plasma inside the torus. And what the physicists had done so far is that you have these 12 magnets, and each magnet had its own model. So they were not cooperating, all these outside magnets, so they were just responding to whatever they saw around their own magnetic field. Then DeepMind said, okay, let's try to train a model that could steer and turn up or turn down the strength of these magnets on the outside of the torus in combination. And what happened was that it created plasma flows and shapes inside the torus that the physicists had never seen before, and it was even more efficient. So I like that it potentially can help us advance in other technologies.
Okay, Peter, so while you go and solve fusion energy, what... what can our listeners do? I suspect a lot out there have already taken a look at ChatGPT. Certainly, I would encourage everyone to sign up, unless you're in Italy, where I think they've banned it for now because of privacy concerns, or they're planning on some kind of ban is taking place, to get a leg up on what this is all about and the power of it. But we've got some infrastructure here on for Saxo clients as well, and ways to look at our theme list.
Yeah, exactly. And you can find it under the research tab inside the Saxo Trader Go. And then you go to the stocks tab. We've highlighted that in red here on slide 13. And you go down to the thematic investing under technology. And then it will be the first theme. And there you can find the AI theme and the five different subcategories that we showed on the previous slide deck, on the previous slide. So go and have a look there. I think it's a good idea to think about how to get exposed to this technology long-term, and whatever you come up with, but start, playing around and look at some of the names in this list, and then think about how you get that exposure.
Yeah, and especially if you're younger, if you need to course correct on what you're doing and what your plans are for the future, there's going to be huge impacts across many industries, setting your career path. Maybe, of course, if you're related, or if you're in an area of, directly related to this, I'm sure you're already way beyond what Peter and I are doing already, but many considerations around this. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about generative AI from here. And do stay tuned, hopefully very soon, for part two of this special edition podcast. For now, have a great break out there if you're listening to this over the Easter holiday. And we'll be back soon, of course, with part two. And stay tuned, as always, for our daily Saxo Market Call podcast. For now, thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.